and welcome to Multiform, a mostly Xbox podcast. I'm Tim Shelton, and I'm joined by
Spencer Rain.
So this is obviously a new endeavor for us. We're just two normal guys. We live in the Midwest. We talk about Xbox a lot in our free time, and so we decided to start recording it. We're not professionals, so the audio quality, some of that stuff will improve over time, so bear with us. So I think we're going to open by doing a little background on kind of who we are, why we're doing this, that kind of thing, and then we'll get into some Xbox news. So let's start with who we are. Spencer, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, like I said, my name is Spencer Rain. I'm in law school right now, about to start my last year. And like Tim said, we both play Xbox and like to talk about a lot in our spare time. So we figured, yeah, well, why don't we record it and just see where that goes? Like you said, we're not professionals. This is the first podcast I've ever done. I kind of don't really know what I'm doing. It's just kind of a casual conversation type idea. That's where this all started with. And I actually started with video games on PlayStation back in the late 90s. I had a PlayStation 1, and then I got a PlayStation 2 shortly thereafter, and I played that actually until 2005. Star Wars Battlefront 2 was the last PlayStation 2 game I ever played and ever bought. And then summer of 06 is when I got a 360, and first game I ever played on the original Xbox 360 was Blazing Angels. Nobody knows what that is,
I'm sure. Deep cut. No, yeah. I remember the cover art vividly.
Yeah, it had like three pilots on it. It was a World War II flying sim, which those don't exist anymore, unfortunately. But I did play Halo 1 and Halo 2 back in the day, of course, like everybody did. I had some friends growing up that had an original Xbox from day one. So I did get Halo 1 and 2 in quite a bit. And a little bit of, I believe, GTA Vice City. That was probably the three games that I played when I was younger. But yeah, that's a little bit of the background for me on Xbox and just gaming in general, I guess.
Yeah, so for me, I started when I was a little younger. We had a NES and a Genesis, and I remember Sonic the Hedgehog being something my brother and I played a lot of. But where I came to Xbox was the Christmas that Halo 2 came out. For Christmas from my dad, I got a Xbox and Halo 2, and I stole my brother's copy of Halo 1 because he had had an Xbox for longer than I had. And then I fell in love, and I got a 360 when Gears of War came out, and pre-ordered a Xbox One, an Xbox One S, an Xbox One X. And now it's, you know, the main thing in my entertainment center computer life. And I find myself talking about it every day, and it just made sense to start doing something with that. So another thing we want to kind of cover is what this show will be, because Spencer and I, you know, I forgot to mention I'm in marketing in a different industry. So I'm not a professional journalist. I'm not a gaming journalist, and we don't aspire to be. I think we consider ourselves fans. You'd agree, right, Spencer?
Yeah, and I'm in law school, which, I mean, that means writing, but I don't do fancy journalism writing. I do very boring, bland legal writing. So, yeah.
So I don't think we're not going to read you the headlines. We're not going to give you know, Wall Street Journal level reporting here. We intend to be something that is fan oriented and discuss, you know, the things from the point of view of a consumer, and particularly consumers in the Midwest, because that's our point of view. And we don't aspire or intend to ever get political with this show or anything like that. This is going to be a family friendly podcast, and we just hope you'll listen.
Yep, I agree with all that. I mean, like you said, we're in the Midwest, so it's a little bit different perspective, I think, on, you know, entertainment and video games and just society in general. And yeah, we're not here to really make money or do anything, you know, on the grand scheme like that. We're pretty much just here to talk about what we already did talk about, and we just decided, hey, let's record it and see what happens. We'll see where we go from here.
So with that, let's jump into some news. And since this is our first episode, some of the main news stories that we're going to cover are within the last week or two. But hopefully if we start doing this weekly, we'll be a little more current on what's been going on. But since so much kind of big stuff has happened in the last few weeks, we want to make sure we get caught up and throw our opinions out there. And if you guys have any feedback or questions, comments, or anything you'd like to have us discuss, we'll throw our Twitter handles out at the end of the show, and you can reach out to us that way. So first up is there's a lot of rumors that have been going on about the next Xbox. Ever since Phil Spencer mentioned it on stage, we started to hear a little bit more in the trades and the industry as far as leaks. It's been going by the name Scarlet. And the only thing we know so far is that the leak says there's going to be two different versions. A Xbox One X style hardware console.
Super console.
Yeah, super console. And something a little lighter that is capable of streaming on the new Xbox streaming service that's in development that we also heard about at E3. So my question to you, Spencer, is how do you feel about the potential of streaming your games exclusively and not having ownership per se?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting looking at it from a two-console perspective, because remember back when the original Xbox One launched back in 2013, the whole thing that got Microsoft in trouble was that they focused more on, you know, TV, movies, and that side of entertainment, and less so on the games. And so it's interesting to see the shift now in 2018, 5 years later, and we don't even know, I guess, what exactly Scarlet's going to be. But if it's true that there's two versions of this console, one of them is exclusively, you know, kind of an underpowered, more of an kind of the entertainment box that they originally wanted to do with the Xbox One. It's interesting that they now have that type of capital to kind of go back and do their original idea for Xbox. And I think it's smart, because I think that's the future. I think streaming is the future, whether that be, you know, movies and TV or video games. I don't know if video game streaming is really there yet, because there's too much of the country, I think, that doesn't have the bandwidth to stream games. Mm-hmm. And the difference between like streaming a game or streaming a movie is, I mean, the movie is 2 hours. A TV show is 30 minutes. A video game, I mean, that's potentially 150 hours. So I don't know if it's practical for, you know, half the country, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, the Midwest especially, or like Alaska. I mean, there's lots of places that just don't have the hardware yet to do a streaming console like that.
It's also interesting because after the launch of the Xbox One and their kind of media first attitude backfired so much that now with streaming, it's not there yet. There's an ownership component, and for them to shift back to that entirely. And I'm curious if the super console, the Xbox One X hardware replacement, whatever that console is next, if that will have the streaming also, meaning this console can do the disc or download-based games that you've always done, but it can also stream and be capable. So it's the streaming console plus and exclude, probably at a higher price point. But if you remember with Xbox Game Pass, a big selling point that they pushed on it was the difference between it and PlayStation Now. Being PlayStation Now, you had to stream, and Xbox Game Pass, you could download the games and not have that latency issue. And now they've pivoted back the other way, and they're talking about the future being streaming.
Yeah, I think as long as I bought an Xbox One X, I pre-ordered it, and I was in law school when it came out, still am. So obviously finances are tough for me at the time. So if I'm willing to do it for that, I'm definitely willing to get a Scarlet if it's going to be doing 4K 60 frames per second for every game and not just Forza Horizon, you know, or Gears 4 or whatever the case may be. So I think there's definitely a market for something that's even more powerful than the Xbox One X, obviously, because technology is always moving forward. People are always going to be wanting to get the next best thing. So I don't know. It'd be interesting. I mean, at the end of the day, I know people talk about it in the industry all the time, but the games are what makes the console, and it was proven in this cycle, and I assume it'll be proven in the next cycle as well. So I don't know, we'll see.
I wonder if the streaming only console is something that started more at the general audience, the people that mostly use the Xbox to play one or two games and also play Netflix and the streaming apps that they rely on, something that's leaner, that has a lower price point and also fits in the entertainment center.
But yeah, I could see that. I mean, I know plenty of people that they use their Xbox, their PlayStation almost, not exclusively, but, you know, 3/4 of the time they're just using Netflix or Hulu or whatever the case is. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously Microsoft, I think they learned from their mistakes in 2012, 2013, and I think if they feel like they can do it now, or if they can you know, introduce two consoles into the market, which can be confusing for consumers. I think people, that was a little bit of a dig on the One X when it came out. It was like, people were like, oh, I just bought the One S. Like, why are you already a year later making another console? So, I mean, if they have plenty of people that, you know, do market testing and those types of things to figure out, like, hey, we can support two consoles at a time, then I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting for sure.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more about it soon. So, moving on, next up, we just came to an end of the summer sale for Xbox.
Yeah.
It was pushed back a little bit this year. Normally it's gone the week of July 4th. And I think that was probably because they had the E3 sale this year, which would have been too close to that. So my question to you is, did you see any good deals, and was there anything you picked up, that you recommend or that you thought was a really good deal? It's too late for listeners to grab on and get that, but maybe it's something to look out for in the future.
Yeah. So I got Forza Motorsport 7, the Gold Edition, and I got Agents of Mayhem. And those are two very, very different games and very different stories behind why I decided to get them. Agents of Mayhem is a little bit shorter story. I played all the Saints Row games, so I have the intimate relationship with Deep Silver and THQ before them. And I kind of wanted to show a little brand loyalty to that studio, just because I know Agents of Mayhem sold really poorly and wasn't really received.
Reportedly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is true. So I kind of wanted to show them a little loyalty. I mean, it was only, I got the, I believe it was the complete edition. It was only $10, and you got all the content that's been released for the game. I haven't played it yet, just because I've been playing Forza and I've just been kind of busy. But Forza, definitely, that's an even stronger case, I guess, of brand loyalty, because that was but it's kind of ironic, because that was the first Forza game that I didn't get at launch, because of the whole loot box thing, the whole loot box controversy. That was really, you know, a really heated topic back to last fall between that and Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Yeah, so that's been in the news this week. They announced that they're taking the loot boxes out of Forza Motorsport 7, and that they would remove them from the future title Forza Horizon 2.
Yeah, I saw that.
Forza Horizon 4, excuse me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, I don't know, the loot box system in Motorsport 7, I mean, I got it after they had been, or that they had been kind of defanged, if you will, because they took a lot of the benefits out of them in the last 6 months. It was more of, you were just getting mods or racing suits. And I mean, racing suits are, I don't want to say pointless, but they don't actually benefit you in any way. It's just
cosmetic.
Kind of a cosmetic upgrade.
What are the mods?
The mods, so those, they either hamper your car in a way, or they make it more difficult for you. So like, they'll turn ABS braking off, or they'll turn off, they'll make you drive a manual, or they'll turn simulation, tire wear, and gas.
So like challenges?
Yeah. It just makes the game harder, and you get more credits. And actually, a lot of them are really nice. I mean, I've been using them. That's, like I said, that's pretty much all I've been playing since I bought it a couple weeks back. And I think, I got the Gold Edition, which was $50, which is a really, really good deal, because it was about $120 worth of content that you could get for $50. And I think it definitely is a market improvement over Forza Motorsport 6, which was, I barely even touched that game. And like I said, I've owned and I've purchased all the Forza games. I'm a really big fan of that franchise. So for me to not get a game until, you know, 7 months after it released, then that was kind of out of the ordinary for me. But I definitely enjoy it. And I think next time people see it go on sale, I would definitely recommend it. It's certainly much more realistic experience than Forza Horizon, which is more of the arcade racing of the two Forza games. So if you're a little worried about that, I would say give it a shot if it's on sale again, because it truly is, it looks excellent, it plays excellent, and there's more cars in that than I think any racing game ever. I mean, don't quote me on that, but there's, I think, 750 cars in that.
We'll have to get our researchers that we don't have to research how many cars are in every racing game ever created.
Yeah, I think I remember when like Gran Turismo 5 was coming out back in the day, they were rumoring to get close to 1,000, but I don't know if that ever actually happened.
I haven't played any of the recent Gran Turismo games, which is a
shame. I played the 5 Prologue on PS3.
I played that as well, and I think that was the last one, and I didn't play 5. And, you know, we forgot to mention that at the top. The reason we called this Multiform a mostly Xbox podcast is because Spencer and I are gamers. We play PC and Mac games. We play PlayStation games. We have in the past played Nintendo games, not as much
I actually
anymore.
Got the SNES Classic, and I've played a grand total of about 3 hours of that.
Yeah, I got it as well, and I haven't really dug into it that much, but, there was a nostalgic factor there. But so there will be times that, especially when big releases happen in the industry on other console platforms, that we might touch on those and how they relate to the Xbox business and the Xbox portfolio stacking up against other first parties. But in general, we play most of our third-party games on the Xbox platform, and we play the majority of the first-party games. So Xbox is really the focus. Plus, when we look at the podcasts and the materials available from a less journalistic point of view in the Xbox community, we just didn't see a ton of podcasts being put out there. So that's why that's the main focus of the show.
Yeah, and that was kind of part of it too. I wanted to just start recording it, is we kind of saw that there really was, outside of the top tier, you know, the IGNs and those types of Xbox related podcasts, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, regular people, regular, you know, common folk, if you want to call them that. Just
we're the double A or single A of podcasting.
Yeah, we're definitely not even double A. Yeah, we're single A. We might even be like, I don't know if there's a league below single A. I think I should know that, but that's what we are, if that is a thing.
So moving on to the next story. Today in the news, there was an interview done, and I didn't pull the clip or the quote, but someone from BioWare was discussing the studio and Anthem, and they said that they were working on secret projects for Mass Effect and Dragon Age. Now, I'm a late adopter of Mass Effect. I played through Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 for the first time in 2017. I'm not sure how I missed them. I know that's a huge franchise to miss back in the day, but I was not huge on RPGs 10 years ago, and so that's kind of where I came into it. And I've only ever just barely touched on Dragon Age. But Spencer, I know these franchises are huge for you, and you've played the majority of those games in those franchises.
Yeah.
So tell me how you feel about them dipping back into Mass Effect after Andromeda, and do you want another Dragon Age game? And if so, what does it need to do to grab you?
Yeah, I'll start with Dragon Age because that's a little bit easier to handle. I played the first one, really enjoyed it. I skipped the second one. I don't remember why. That was like maybe 10 years ago when that one came out. And then Inquisition, I was close to a launch title. I think that came out the year after the launch of Xbox One. And it was a solid game. I definitely enjoyed, I would say, a lot of the aspects of the gameplay itself. The story was weaker compared to the previous entries, or at least the first one, the only other one that I played. And I definitely would welcome a new entry in that game. As long as they fix, I think the biggest issue was the shallow nature of a lot of there's a kind of a infestation, if you will, of like the fetch quest, which is a huge problem in a lot of these RPGs. That was also the Mass Effect Andromeda issue, because they were kind of copying what they did in that game, trying to get more of that Witcher style of Radiant kind of, not, I don't want to say fetch quest, but just quests non-essential to the story or non-essential to factions or non-essential to any of the main overarching themes, and just kind of little tangential quests, and that kind of made the game feel really shallow. And that bleeds into Mass Effect Andromeda, and the reason why it was, in my opinion, and I think in a larger sense, I mean, a lot of the gaming community, really, especially after the trilogy, really were down on Andromeda because it was very shallow, and obviously the facial animations, I mean, that was a huge thing when it came out. I think, because it wasn't the original Mass Effect team, because, right, it was BioWare, not Montreal, that worked on it, and their regular, or Edmonton, and Montreal,
yes,
is their mainline studio. That's,
yes,
what happened. So all, and I hate to call them the B team, but I think it was clear, based off of what you got in Andromeda, that this secondary studio that made the game were inferior quality to Montreal, the original guys that worked on it.
Because the original Mass Effect team, I think, was the team that moved on to do Anthem.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. So I would welcome another foray into Mass Effect or Dragon Age. I think Dragon Age should be first, not only because of the chronological order of releases, that makes sense, but also I think Mass Effect still just needs it needs more time.
Time to breathe.
It just needs time to breathe, time for people to kind of move on, because I played Andromeda all the way through, put 65 hours into it, about 100% of it. I mean, there's a few achievements I didn't get, but I did my time with it, and I did not want to go back to it. And I think my Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 history, I probably have at least 3, possibly 5 completed playthroughs of all 3 games, and I've started at least a dozen saves.
So, yeah, I mean, I binged through 1, 2, and 3, one in January, the second one in February, the third one in March of 2017.
March is when Andromeda came out.
And then Andromeda came out. I started it, and I got 3 or 4 worlds in, you know, roughly. I think I played like maybe 20 hours, 30 hours. I was going slow and collecting things and being kind of methodical about it, but then it didn't grab me. And when the next big release came out, you know, I pulled away from it, and I just never felt compelled to go back. Not to say I don't want another Mass Effect game, because I really think there's a shortage of space shooters. We have a lot of medieval and mythical RPGs, but I said shooter before, I meant RPG. But so that's why I'd like to see them return. But I think that spacing and time, and you got to think that with them calling these secret projects and Anthem being just about to hit, it has to be just specking games at this point, doing concepts and ideas of where the next one could go after Andromeda. Plus, you have to assume they're also going to take it really slow, because rushing one to market after kind of the tepid response to the last one could doom that franchise.
Yeah, and it's actually, I think the Mass Effect thing is kind of surprising, because I think a lot of people really thought that maybe Mass Effect was done, just because of the market kind of shifting towards the Anthems and the Destinies and those sorts of games, the Division and those sorts of games, that studios just, I mean, there's a few out there like CD Projekt Red and Bethesda that are willing to put in the work to make single player only huge open world RPG type games. And so I think a lot of people thought that when Anthem was announced, that was kind of just like, oh, well, there goes Mass Effect, because I don't recall the sales numbers or how it did, you know, what is that, fiscally or economically?
Yeah.
But I just know that from the consumer standpoint, it just bombed. And I know there's always a lot of the fans that will stick with it no matter what. But I mean, one of my really good friends, I mean, he was the same as me. Like, we both have, you know, like I said, 3, 5, half dozen playthroughs, and I don't even know if he finished it. Like, he has hundreds of hours into those first 3 games, and I don't think he even finished it. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think, yeah, if they give it time to breathe, release a Dragon Age title before another Mass Effect title, maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe Anthem will take off, and I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Anthem 2 will come out before we see Mass Effect again. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, another item that has been in the news, QuakeCon is coming up now.
Rage.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about QuakeCon, and so why don't you take us through you're looking forward to as far as announcements and gameplay reveals?
Yeah, so QuakeCon is kind of interesting to me. Like, I don't, it's a Bethesda thing, and it's all about this year is going to be Fallout 76. They kind of started the PR campaign up this week, tweeting out pictures of Vault Boys and Vault Boy costumes. And also, I read today that I didn't realize this, but they released the cover that they created for Country Roads, the John Denver song that they released with the trailer. They released that song, their cover of it for that trailer. They released that for sale, and all the proceeds went to Habitat for Humanity. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
A little random little tidbit there.
Yeah, so if you have any interest in that, go buy it and know that your money isn't going to Bethesda. It's going to a good cause.
Yeah, and so I think I know the headliners are going to be Doom Eternal, the sequel to the 2016 reboot, which I didn't play.
Gameplay reveal.
Yeah. I didn't actually play that game. I played Doom back in the day. Well, not back in the day. More recently, I think on the Xbox 360 arcade.
The port that they did to
kind of like Marathon and the original Wolfenstein.
So it came out when there was a lot on my plate.
Yeah, I think that was kind of how it was for me, too. It was 2016, so I don't recall if it was fall. Was it fall 2016? If it was, then I was definitely really busy, because that was my first semester of law school. So
I played 2 levels of it. So I don't know how many there are total, and definitely gave me a feel for the like fast gameplay. And there's this hilarious thing when you pick up a little doll collectible of Doom Guy. He brofists the little doll and puts the collectible in his pocket.
I think I've seen that actually.
I think it's become a meme at this point. But the gameplay and the speed and everything felt great about it. And, you know, I didn't complete the game, so I don't know how it turns out, but the consensus on the game seems to be really positive.
Yeah.
And people lost their minds at the Bethesda event when Doom Eternal was announced, especially with the kind of Hell on Earth kind of tease it gave in what they did show. So it makes me want to pick up Doom when it's on sale.
Yeah.
The next, you know, like this holiday, maybe at a Black Friday sale. But you know how the backlog is, right?
Yeah. Tim has a very ridiculous backlog. I actually got through a lot of mine this summer. I had Gears 4, Titanfall 2. I started into Just Cause 3 a little bit, but that's kind of just when I need to shut my brain off type game. And then Forza, like I said. But the other two QuakeCon games, Rage 2 and Fallout 76, between those two, Rage 2, I didn't play the first one, just like I didn't play the first Doom, but this looks interesting to me just because of how they're expanding on the first one and making it more open, making it more, I don't want to say customizable, but just more like, there's more you can do. It's less linear and more of kind of what you think of when you think of Bethesda. So what do you, I mean, I know you, I don't know if you, you didn't play the first one, did you?
Well, so actually I did, but so here's my story with Rage. I played it at this year's E3, Rage 2. In fact, I was lucky enough that when I went in for my gameplay demo, the game director came in with our group and stuck in the back, and they were introducing us, getting ready to take us in. And they were like, oh, and we've been joined by, you know, the game director. His name escapes me, but, I really love what they're doing with the gameplay. The abilities, the kind of the energy of it was really fun. We got to play one mission, and so after having played that, when I came back, I saw Rage 1 on sale for backwards compatible on Xbox One, and I picked it up for like $3-5.
That's a 360
like that.
Title?
Yeah, it's a 360 title.
Oh, wow,
title.
It's been that long.
I actually have a friend that was a developer on the game, the same guy that sent us
yeah,
the signed copy of Wolfenstein.
Yep.
So shout out to him. He knows who he is. But yeah, so I bought the first game and started playing through it just to kind of see, to compare to what I played at E3. And, you know, it's of its time. It's definitely a game from that era of 360. It kind of has a Gears of War aesthetic to it as far as it's kind of a lot of gray. But I can't say that I didn't enjoy it. It's a solid game. It's just one that kind of didn't have the cachet or get kind of into the zeitgeist of gamer culture, and it was kind of looked over, I think, for that.
Yeah, I think so.
And I'm not deep enough into it to know if it has like fatal flaws, right? You know, like maybe the ending is completely soft, or you know, the gameplay loop gets really boring. But from the, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes I played of one, and then the demo of Rage 2, it's something that I don't think should be looked over, but so I hope.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in it. I didn't play the first one, but this one for whatever reason has caught my attention, and I'll be looking into it for definitely.
So I think where
and then Fallout 76.
Oh,
we can talk about that briefly.
Is that going to be a quick con?
I think yeah, that's it.
Playable or like?
I don't know if no.
When's the beta?
Yeah, no, it won't be playable because the beta they announced is going to be in September, October, I believe. So less than a month before release, which is kind of weird. It's not really a beta; it's more of a demo at that point.
Or a stress test, I guess.
Yeah, or like stress test. That's a good way of describing it. Fallout 76. I think that and Doom are kind of going to be the main parties there. Fallout 76 is interesting because I mean, as you know, I'm a huge Fallout fan as well.
Oh, he's played so many hundreds of hours of Fallout 4.
Yeah,
he's got a backlog too occasionally, and when I look over on my friends list, he's playing Fallout 4 and he's got it
modded
to and it says he's playing and he's level 99999.
So I actually got Fallout 3. I don't remember why I got Fallout 3. I think because of Oblivion, and that was kind of just like, oh, another Bethesda title, I'll get Oblivion. I'll get Fallout 3. So I love Fallout 3. That's in my top five of all time. And then New Vegas, I think over Christmas, over the winter season, this past one, I got the season pass for Fallout New Vegas, you know, 7 years later. And that was a fantastic game.
Did you play through it all those years later?
Well, I had beaten the game years before, but I didn't get
DLC.
Yeah, I got through all the DLC.
Really?
Yeah, last winter. And then Fallout 4, like Tim said, I probably don't have 1,000 hours in it, but I definitely have hundreds of hours into that. But I am pretty confident that I'm going to skip 76.
Why?
I am 95% sure I'm going to skip it just because I appreciate the idea, and I like the idea of a Fallout game that you can play with your friends. I think that is really, really cool, and I mm-hmm. think that there's something there. I think Bethesda is onto something with that. But first of all, I don't have a lot of friends that would want to play a Fallout game online. I mean, I definitely have friends that played it.
You'd have both to in carry real life. Me.
Yeah, I'd have to carry Tim. But it honestly looks just like Fallout 4, in my opinion. I mean, there's definitely like the draw distances and the render distances and those types of things. A lot of the shadows and lighting are definitely better because it's, what, 3 years or 2 years newer, 2 years, you know, more work on that engine, which I really hope Bethesda gets a new engine sometime soon or does something. Because if Elder Scrolls 6 or Starfield is on that same dang base engine, that's going to be troublesome. Not to get too off track. But I just think I'm going to skip it because there's too much coming on, like Red Dead, like Forza Horizon 4, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which I am so excited for. I loved Origins. I'm so excited for that game. So between those three and just school, I think 76 is just the weak link for me. Not to mention Tomb Raider. I mean, there's just so much coming in the next few months that you have to start cutting at some point. And I think 76 for me is on that cutting block.
What a time to be alive that there's so many good games. I remember, so growing up in 1997, I started subscribing to Game Informer magazine, and I actually am still subscribed to this day, but the story about that is I used to open it up in the post E3 issue every year to look at all the games that were announced, and then they also did a end of the year, like top games of the year issue. And I would go through that, and I would look for games that were in genres that I liked to play because I had run out of games to play because there were just not enough good games. And now I'm left with the opposite problem as an adult, where there's too many good games and too many things that are exciting and franchises that I love that are coming out. And I'm like, which of these games can I afford to pass on so that I can invest more time in another franchise or another game? It's kind of insane, especially the juxtaposition of where gaming was in the 90s compared to now.
Even in the last few years, there were definitely years like when the Xbox One launched, I believe in 2013, there really wasn't a whole lot that year. You had Forza Motorsport 5, and
the original Titanfall.
And you had like Assassin's Creed 4. And
Dragon Age.
There's definitely a few years, that was 2014.
Oh, next year?
Yeah.
Well, but it launched in the fall, and then that next spring, didn't you get Dragon Age? Within the first like launch window,
I got it.
I'm doing air quotes,
but I thought Dragon Age Inquisition. Let me look that up because that's gonna bug me. I talked about it earlier too.
Yeah, well, I mean,
November 18th, 2014. I was right.
Oh, so it is a full year after the launch of the Xbox
One. Yeah, so there are definitely a lot of years where it seems like the falls can be dead because, yeah, you'll have your Call of Duties and you'll have your Maddens or whatever and the occasional triple A title. Yeah, Forza. But it used to be before Horizon, Forza wasn't even every year. You had it every 2 years back in the good old days. Not to say I don't love Horizon.
Horizon. But I think, is Motorsports better for you? And I prefer Horizon.
I don't know. I would say right now it's a lot closer to call just because of how much I've enjoyed Forza Motorsport 7 compared to 6 and 5, which are really, really shallow games. So, yeah. I don't know. It's exciting this fall for sure, what's coming. And it is crazy that a Fallout game is going to be one that might get cut for me personally. And I don't even know. Tomb Raider, I think, would be... That might be a my birthday or, you know, Christmas time type deal for me at least.
Yeah, I think in a future episode we will probably break down the big releases for the rest of the year and kind of talk through the ones that we intend to buy, and the ones we intend to wait and maybe get on sale later when we have more time, and the ones that we are intending to pass on. But since we've already kind of, this is being the first episode, I think we'll do that. Maybe in our second or third episode, or especially since the fall's still a little ways off, so we still have some time for games to get delayed into next year.
People talk that the games coming out around Red Dead were going to get delayed, but I don't think so. I think what's set is set, especially some of the stuff in September and October. And
let's come back to the fall release schedule on our next episode or two episodes from now.
Yeah, and I think something else we can get to later is we can talk about the different versions of these games.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's definitely something we want to go
over. Especially
with
Red Dead. Red Dead is something that needs to be looked at in depth because there's way too many versions of that game.
So, in general, you know, I usually pre-order my console because of scarcity, but games less so, but I think another thing we intend to cover in a future episode is breaking down some of the big releases and the multiple versions of those games to kind of dissect which DLC is worth it to buy ahead of time if you're really invested in that franchise, and which is kind of just a waste that is kind of a marketing gimmick. We have a few more topics to cover. First, there's been quite a few big games that got patches, and I don't know that we want to go really in depth into each of these games, but I think we will just at least mention them because some of them are pretty interesting. The first one is Ghost Recon Wildlands. It's kind of amazing how much Ubisoft has been sticking with their franchises and really investing in additional patches for second and third years of their games. The Wildlands patch is significant because it's a Rainbow Six Siege tie-in where they bring in a character from that game for a story mission. Oh, yeah, two characters, because you fight alongside one, and then you have another one in your ear that you meet during the cutscene. It's Valkyrie and Caveira, right?
Caveira,
depending on how you say it.
Yep.
The last Operation 1 was the Splinter Cell Sam Fisher tie-in, and this now Operation 2 with the Siege. I played through it already, and I really enjoyed it. The reward you get for completing it is Caveira's gloves, and when you get an assassination kill while wearing the gloves, it does a special animation that mirrors what she does when you interrogate a suspect in Rainbow Six Siege. I really love that they're doing that they're tying in other franchises into Wildlands, and to be honest, it got me back into Wildlands. So I played 50% of the game and got pulled to something else, as I do, and them putting out these operations has made me interested, because I love Splinter Cell, because I love Siege, to go back and play it. And honestly, that's been the game I've been playing the most right now. So another game that got a big patch was Destiny 2. They patched in a bunch of balance and changes, but also their summer event. I was a massive Destiny 1 player, played thousands of hours. That was definitely my favorite game from the middle part of this generation. But I've been a little soft on Destiny 2. They kind of lost me by the second DLC, so I'm not sure that I'm going to jump into this patch too much. But I will be checking out Forsaken when it comes out this fall. And I know, Spencer, you don't even play Destiny at all.
Yeah, I got the first one, and I beat the story, and I played maybe 50 hours of it. But it just never... I'm not a big online multiplayer fan. I used to be. I played a lot of Battlefield on Xbox 360, and a lot of the earlier Call of Duties, but the last few years, I mean, all my friends kind of trickled away from that type of stuff. That was part of it, but also I found more interest in the RPGs and the single player type experiences, which is definitely my preference. So yeah, I didn't even get Destiny 2, so that's definitely more of your purview.
The last big patch that I wanted to take note of is Middle-earth Shadow of War. And this is another example of, like Ubisoft, of a developer sticking with a game, taking negative fan feedback, and making a change. And when I originally wrote this down in our show notes, I thought that we would cover it because they're removing loot boxes. That's the big takeaway. There was a balance problem with Shadow of War where the end of the game could feel really grindy because it felt like you were being incentivized to buy their loot box mechanic to make the grind lessened. And to their credit, they came out and said, you know, we agree with the community, and we see that this broke the Nemesis system and was outside the scope of what the game was intended to be. That was a little softened my accolades to give them for doing something really fan forward when a week later it was announced that Shadow of War Definitive Edition is coming out. And it's like, okay, so there was a financial monetary incentive for them to make this game have kind of a positive relaunch because they want to sell the Definitive Edition. But still, they did the right thing. And
yeah,
they did it 6 months too late. But
that's kind of what the Forza Motorsport situation was. A lot of those early loot boxes that they removed.
I don't think you could ever pay for those. I think it was a loot box mechanic, but they never let you pay real world money. Is that wrong?
I know it didn't. It launched like how you're saying it, and I think there were like a few weeks or a couple months where you could pay real world money, but then they quickly took that out in kind of that Battlefront 2 backlash last fall and last November especially, because I think Motorsport launched before Battlefront, so it was kind of ahead of the tidal wave of backlash.
Yeah, it definitely launched before.
The whole pay-to-win thing, I know there's a couple of European countries that have outlawed it. I believe Belgium and the Netherlands both have outlawed it, and Germany's kind of thinking about it right now as far as considering it as gambling. And so I think it's definitely something that maybe we'll remember it. Maybe it'll be one of those things that we think about on this generation, but I hope that we've kind of gotten past it. I have no problem with paying for, you know, skins for characters or cars, or not, hopefully not cars, because that's a huge part of Forza Motorsport and Horizon is people creating skins for cars. But I have no problem with paying for, you know, the cosmetic upgrades. But at any point that you're paying to progress faster, I know GTA is a big proponent of that with their shark cards.
Yeah, I absolutely paying hate the shark cards in GTA Online.
For millions of dollars in game. I think that's just sketchy and I can't have any part of that.
But I will say, go play Shadow of War. Show the developer that people support the fact that they did this. And if you're at all interested in Middle Earth, or honestly, it's a great game. I love the first one. I'm only part of the way into Shadow of War, but I will definitely complete it and show some love.
Yeah, I played Mordor, and I actually really did enjoy it, but that was one of the games that I enjoyed it, but it didn't quite capture me. So I put about, I don't know, 20 hours into it, and then it kind of fell off for me. But I definitely enjoyed it. I agree with Tim. I think you should support developers that kind of learn their lesson and make more consumer-friendly choices. Like, they're like, is it Ubisoft or is it Warner Brothers? I don't know.
That's Warner Brothers.
It is.
Yeah,
Warner
Brothers. Yeah, Middle Earth is Warner Brothers. Ubisoft is the Siege Wildlands.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you had said that Shadow of War was also Ubisoft or not. But regardless, I mean, it's good that companies across the board are realizing that, number one, loot boxes are bad. And number two, in general, they're willing to, you know, patch games or change things in their titles after they release to make them more user-friendly and consumer-friendly. I think that's really good.
And I'm pretty sure this will not be the last time that we discuss microtransactions, yeah, loot boxes, or pay to win on this show, because it's such a topic right now. But I think we'll leave it there for now, and we'll hit that at the next big turn in this story. The last thing we're going to hit on before we close out is Spencer and I both really love the Games with Gold program. I mean, it's free games. What's not to love?
So, yeah, and this month is really fantastic.
It is a
actually
very solid month. Spencer, why don't you take us through what they can get right now?
Yeah, so right now, August 1st through August 15th, you can get Dead Space. Is that Dead Space 3?
Yeah,
Dead Space 3. I played the first one of those. I actually used a very scary game. Very scary.
The third game was a little bit controversial at the time because it became a little more arcadey.
Yeah, I recall that.
But I mean, I have some friends that absolutely love it. They still play it to this day. So I downloaded it, and I intend to try it. So
yeah, so that's August 1st through 15th, and that's a 360 game. So if you still have just a 360, you can get that and enjoy that between now and the next 2 weeks. Also, from August 1st all the way through the month is Forza Horizon 2 on Xbox One, which I believe that's your least favorite one?
It's my least favorite Forza Horizon game.
Right, because of the setting in Europe and Italy and France.
It just had a lot of brown, and I don't know, it just didn't grab
me. Which is kind of ironic, because Forza Horizon 3, of course, is set in Australia, which you would expect to have more brown, because half the dang country is desert.
But there's so much, like, lush tropicals,
it's
and
very
oceans,
true. I think,
colors.
Yeah, I think 3 is definitely the best of the three that are out so far. But, I mean, if you've never played any of the Forza games, or if you've only played the first one, or you only played the third one, it's, again, a free game, so you should pick it up. But I think Horizon 2 really is a solid game, because it built on Horizon 1, which was kind of obviously the original one, and it was kind of this new idea for Playground Games, like, hey, can we make an open world racing game that's completely different from Motorsport, because Motorsport, of course, is the more simulator traditional
racing.
Yeah, exactly. And Horizon is anything but that. I mean, they're definitely track races, but they're nothing like simulator racing.
Another thing I wanted to hit on the first show of every month is Xbox Game Pass. So I have Xbox Game Pass. Spencer does not. I find a lot of value in it because I play games that I otherwise would not, and I don't feel obligated to beat them because it's a subscription service. So if I just want to pop in and try something out that I wouldn't have otherwise tried, I feel like that there's no burden to entry because I'm already subscribed to Game Pass. So I just wanted to throw out there the new titles that they added this week for August. I'm not going to go through them all every month. You guys can go check that out on Major Nelson or on the Xbox console. But the ones that I think are big or that we can recommend because we've played or we think are worth it, I do want to draw attention to those. And the two big ones this month are Rise, Son of Rome, which was an Xbox One launch title. Spencer and I both beat it.
It was one of the games I got. I think I got that, Motorsport 5, and Assassin's Creed 4. Yep. Those were the games I played for several months.
At launch, yeah. Yeah. Particularly, I liked it because it was really polished visually. Like, even now, it still holds up as a very great visually game. The combat could get repetitive, and to be honest, there's a small minority that vocally calls for a sequel to this game.
I'd play a sequel.
I would too. I think it would be a great idea. In fact, especially when it's not a launch title and has more time for polish and development, I think it could be something great. But obviously, sales probably weren't the strongest with it being a launch title. So
I think my most vivid memory of that game is probably the fact that the enemy models that they had about four. And so you would see the same guy every 45 seconds.
Well, then you can name each of the four of them, and then you can kill them repeatedly.
And I don't know if that was because it was a launch title, so they were like, hey, we want to make this visually stunning, but we also don't want to take up our bandwidth with having multiple character designs. That would be my guess back in 2012, 2013 when that was being developed. But anyway, to go back to the games with gold, unless you had more in Game Pass.
Oh, yeah, I was going to continue with Game Pass. I didn't know, are we going to... Do you want to cover the games with gold games that are later in the month, or do you just want to wait and hit those on next week's show since we'll be closer to those hitting?
Yeah, we can do that. That's fine.
That way this segment probably doesn't become too long, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. So remember, you have Forza Horizon 2 the entire month of August on Xbox One, and then Dead Space 3, which is backwards compatible for Xbox One from now until the 15th.
And then the additional games come on the 16th. The other big Game Pass game this month is Hitman, the complete first season. This is the most recent Hitman game that came out 2-3 years ago. It was episodic at the time, but now it's the full package. It's a really great game. I own it. I owned it before Game Pass, and I can't recommend it enough if you like stealth games or you like the Hitman franchise. I think it's really a return to form from the earlier Hitman Blood Money style games, and less like the Absolution KD type games.
I really enjoyed Blood Money. That was, I think, Blood Money and I can't remember, one of the earlier ones on PS2. Those are the only two that I've played, but I really enjoyed those earlier entries, and I haven't played anything since then.
Well, now you can. You just need to get Game Pass.
Yeah, I need to get Game Pass. That's the moral of the story.
Honestly, I think right now it's the best value in gaming. Like $10 a month and playing all the first-party games.
Mm-hmm.
We can debate the values of Game Pass maybe also in a future show.
I agree.
I think the last thing let's hit on is what one game are you playing the most right now, Spencer, and what will you be playing this week? And then tell us where they can find you if they want to provide feedback or questions or anything over the next week.
Well, like I said, Forza Motorsport and Just Cause, those are kind of the main things I'm playing right now. I plan on getting into Agents of Mayhem at some point in the next week, but definitely Forza Motorsport and a little bit of Call of Duty World War II Online. That's a random out of left field, I know, but I have friends that like to play that, so that's a little bit more of the brain shutting off time.
Spencer's a big history buff, so that also scratches that ish.
Yeah, I tried playing Battlefield 1 this week for the first time probably since December, and I was terrible. I don't know why, but I was terrible. It was a rough experience. But if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Makes It Rain, which is MAKES_IT_REHN.
That
Rain.
Really rolls off the tongue.
I know, which is how you say my last name. And then on Xbox, my gamer tag is Rain101. So if you guys want to follow me there, that's where I'll be.
And my big games that I'll be playing this week, I'm hoping to finish out Wildlands. I'm almost there. I just keep getting sidetracked, getting collectibles, doing side missions, doing content. You can just get lost roaming around, like killing Sicarios.
Yep.
So I'm hoping to finish that out this week, and then I definitely will fall into more PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
As always with you.
I can't pull myself away. It's just when you're playing with friends, it's the perfect just hang out and shut your mind off and play a game. People sometimes get frustrated with the jankiness or the crashes or anything. None of that ever bothers me. It's just such a kind of unique experience that it's just cathartic. So, and you can find me on Twitter. My tag is much simpler than Spencer's. It's at Tim Shelton. My name, just Tim Shelton. You can find me there. So this was Multiform, a mostly Xbox podcast. Man, I already got it wrong.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get the name down. We'll get that down.
And if you stick with us, we're hoping to do these weekly, and hopefully they get better over time. And, as Spencer goes back to law school, we may have a few guest hosts here and there. So that'll be a surprise that comes in the future.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, and then on Twitter at MultiformPod.
And for this first episode of Multiform, I'm Tim Shelton.
I'm Spencer Rain.
Goodbye.